to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a chaos edition of Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined this afternoon by Adam Camilleri.
Hello. Welcome to the denizens of the warp.
And TJ Lanigan.
Hey, guys. How we all doing?
Pretty well, man. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, so right down into, we're going to look at the dark side. We've been talking about Imperials for a long time, and I think it's time to flip the other side of that coin and talk about the dark side, the Eye of Terror. You know,
there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I don't know where you want to start. Maybe, I know you spent a lot of time thinking about Death Guard, and I'd like to talk about Thousand Suns if we get time.
Of course. So, I mean, the real big thing about Death Guard is, like, from first glance, all of 8th edition, they were a strong army, but they kind of lost their way, like, the further on to the edition we went, because they were basically the second codex that was out. So, you know, the further you go into an edition without basically an update on that book, the kind of more stagnant they get, the less choices they get, because other armies get better choices. So, right at the end of 8th edition, we got a Psychic Awakening. And honestly, if I had to take bets on which one was the best Psychic Awakening book, it would have been this one. This book was ridiculous. So breath
overall,
of fresh air.
Like what
Guard.
It gave to each faction that's yes. in the book? Like page for page, you think it's better?
What's up?
Page for page, you think it's better?
Yeah, I mean, the Abmech got tons of stuff in there. Like, none of the factions in that book were like, well, eh. I didn't really feel like, you know, like in previous books, like the Thousand Suns book, maybe that had extremely strong Grey Knights. It had some Dark Angels and some T-Suns. Yeah, some very meh T-Suns. The Orc book, kind of the same deal, you know, and that's kind of the way that most of the books went. The Tau book was strong, but the Tau portion was strong, not the Imperial Guard portion. It was okay.
So you're saying that War of the Spider was the first time we saw two factions taken from relative obscurity to absolute powerhouses, that being Death Guard and Casper Custodes?
Yeah. What about Abmech? They're in there too.
No, they're not. They're in Engine War.
I guess Engine War. Yeah. I mean, Custodes are super strong too, but they're strong. Like, they've always been good. The problem with them is that they have a very low unit choices other than Forge World. So, but they always get the most powerful stratagems. Their stratagems, I don't know, I'm sure you guys have seen it, you guys have talked about it, but like their stratagems are like, for one CP, ignore cover, increase your range by 25 inches, shoot six guys, they all die, and you gain you know, two up invul. Like, it's, they get
it's
all
pretty
the
good
moves.
Value.
Like, it's, well, yeah, it's super good.
That's actually what I said on that episode. I said before the week before the Custodes release, I'm like, man, if Custodes get anything actually reasonably good, they already have one of the best and most well-rounded pages of stratagems, or like a toolbox of stratagems. They've got everything already. Hey, they just need like their actual baseline power brought up a little bit.
This is not an Imperium show.
So anyway, so that was that book. And then you've got the Death Guard side. There was even another section of the book that we're not even going to talk about that was like three pages, but they were like, we remade this model. Don't you want it? And I was like, it has its own faction. I was like, no, but that's the Fabius Vile portion of the book. The Death Guard portion of the book literally touches every unit choice in the army. Like, there's literally a stratagem and or relic and or company for every unit in the book. So they were, like I said, they already had strong options. Their stratagems, their relics, and their warlord traits are just a little stagnant because, well, they haven't been looked at in a while. And, like, some of their verbiages and things like that were kind of just stale. They just haven't been done anything with for a while. Now the new book is just insane. I mean, all the power level clicked up three or four ticks.
Well,
so,
what's making you think that? Because, there, you know, there were, we actually started to see Plague Marines kind of actually make it onto the table, like, in fits and spurts. I guess like a good Nurgle army should be, but we definitely saw people holding it down with Plague Burst Crawlers, and then you'd see more Tyrion pop up every now and then. So what has been something that got this kind of buff up, either because of a stratagem or some increased utility or what have you?
So basically the first thing to go over, like I said, is every unit gets touched. The second thing to go over is the units that were already good, Plague Burst Crawlers, Plague Marines, Terminators, those guys got even better with abilities. So like your Plague Marines got the ability now to give everybody a bubble that gives them an invul, something they didn't have before. Yeah. So it takes already resilient troops and makes them even more resilient. Then they have an ability to basically reroll ones and twos on their Feel No Pain saves, making, again, that unit that was already super difficult to kill even more difficult to get rid of. So just those two things on your basic troops is just the tip of the iceberg. So now you have Plague Burst Crawlers, my favorite unit. I was probably one of like maybe four or five people who took it to LVO and played with it and did well with him. But like now all three of these gorgeous, unkillable models now can get a four up invul. A four up invul on a model that is already maybe you're killing one or two throughout the course of the game is just insane. And then you couple that with ninth edition rules, which makes them even better. Due to the fact that now they don't get the penalties for moving and shooting. They can shoot into combat now with their flamers. You know, their mortar becomes a blast weapon, so that helps them with hordes. All that stuff coupled together makes that unit 100% more appetizing.
I do really think that their only drawback in 8th was the fact that they occasionally got that minus one when you moved and shot them.
Mm. There was that. There was also when your opponent ran up to them with a squad of boys and they touched them and you were like, okay, I'm going to have to dig this out now.
That is unfortunate, yes. But that's gone.
Uh-huh. Well, especially a lot of the time when that back then, I know a lot of people, when the meta would shift and people would stack things that were good against Plague Bearers, our guys down my end would shift the Plague Bearers out for Plague Burst Crawlers. And then they ran into a whole new slew of problems when not only were people running and tapping their Plague Burst Crawlers, but those smites and directional smites they were trying to get angles on into premium targets had to smite out garbage from their front lines.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a thing. And then the biggest change, I think, that helps them in their favor is now also the charge phase. You can no longer just charge into a unit and then, you know, do something with it afterwards. You can't just charge around things. Like, you can't just engage a unit and then eventually make your way over to another unit. So, like, that's a big deal with Plague Burst Crawlers. With them being in the front, it kind of denies your opponent from really utilizing the fact that they're just there and they can touch them and that will be cool. Because you're like, well, next turn I'm going to fire into combat firstly. And then people are like, well, there's no more Overwatch. I'm like, yeah, but if you want to charge the unit behind the tank, you're probably going to have to charge the tank. Because if you fail that charge, that's really going to hurt. And you're just going to be standing there.
I've got a question for you, TJ. A lot has been made of the 9th edition changes for Chaos. I mean, notoriously, Chaos at a competitive level was a three-faction army. It was a three-faction. Every army usually had three factions in it, three detachments. With that being a fundamental change to how lists are created, how are you approaching list construction now? Are you looking at taking mono detachment, mono army, or are you taking doubles, or are you taking souped or not souped?
It's definitely soup. Chaos, I don't think is a faction, unfortunately, that can ever function in a vacuum, in a one, you know, mono list. Even as strong as the Death Guard book is, you don't have access to warp time. And that is a power that if you don't have it, you're going to feel it. That is definitely something you need.
You think it's even more important now because of the fact that you've got to get around a screen? You can't just go through it.
Hold these objectives. Yeah, you got to get on these objectives. You got to force your opponent to come get you. So it's very significant to have a power that lets you move again and run. Well,
just thinking about it, one of the most powerful things you could do as a Death Guard player, or as a Chaos player for that matter, is to get some of these really durable units with a lot of longevity onto objectives before your opponent. Like, and say the onus is on you to try and shift me now by, you know, rain, hail, or fire, whatever you've got to do. And being able to put that pressure on early would be a huge, huge bonus. Whereas, you know, you're not at the behest of a charge phase or a shooting phase or cover or whatever. Just getting there first seems to be a big deal. And yeah, warp time, I kind of feel like it's necessary. I wish there was, like, you know how the Nurgle Demons have all these buffs to movement and advancing and charging with the Poo Tree and all that stuff. Like, Death Guard don't necessarily get any of that.
No, but the tree is 100 times better than it's ever been.
Oh, yeah, because you don't waste an entire detachment to get
Correct.
It in now.
It's just huge free. Deal. It's a free detachment you can just take because your warlord is already Nurgle. So you can take the tree with the tanks, which I did when I first was building lists, just trying it out, see how it works. So, I mean, the tanks are greatly improved. That's the big deal. And then, like I said, all your infantry is greatly improved. And then one of the most needed strats which was a very big surprise for me, is the ability to give units that do not have feel no pain for one CP, basically.
Oh, wow. So what are you considering using that on? Where do you see the mileage there?
Defilers.
Well, Defilers with feel no pain is really strong. Also, the big winners of this stuff is it goes by wound characteristics for the unit. So you can put it on big units that are one wound each, and it only costs you one CP.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm looking at possessed, 20 possessed that now have feel no pain all the time. No spell required.
Well, as soon as Paul said Defiler, I was like, Levy Dread with double butcher arrays.
Yep. Now, we don't know what... Deos. Yeah, I mean, all that stuff is going to be good. We don't know exactly what the Forge World rules are going to be when they come out, but those are definitely some big targets. Another big one that a lot of people have been seeing a lot of traction on is Chaos Spawn. Chaos Spawn are cheap for the amount of wounds you get. You can give them the 5-buff Invul, and now you can give them a 5-buff Feel No Pain.
Paul, when was the last time you heard anybody mention Chaos Spawn as anything legitimately worth considering?
Oh, it's been forever. It has been forever and a day.
So, I mean, those guys
are fast, great. Don't they? Like, they move pretty fast?
Yes, they move super fast. So that's the nice part about that. They get D6 attacks. You have a new relic now that if you fire and hit a unit, you make everybody who shoots a unit or gets in melee with that unit get plague weapons now. So now you have plague weapon bolters, plague weapon melee attacks from spawn, your tank sluggers and all their, the defiler attacks all have plague weapon. So that opens up a whole bunch of possibilities.
A unit of 5 chaos spawn, they're 23 points apiece.
Yep.
So a unit of 5 is sub 125 points. What are we, 120, 119 points, something like that.
And what are they? Toughness 5, 4 wounds?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, nothing to sneeze at there. That is a good points per wound ratio.
Yep. You get a 5-buff Invul. You get a 5-buff Feel No Pain. You're a demon, so you get to move around and do stuff like that. You get,
the Heretic Astarte keyword? Probably not. But...
Of course they do. Okay. They're Chaos Spawn.
So that's you saying that's for Veterans of the Long War?
And Warp Time.
And Warp Time.
And
yeah,
Warp Time, yeah.
You now, get on the other time, you get your Veterans. You get your Prescience if you really needed it, so...
Switching over to demons then, because the only thing I could think of that would be more durable point per wound would be Beast of Nurgle. Mm. How are they shaping up?
Demons took a hit.
Is that just fun?
Beast of Nurgle, you can actually take those in Death Guard too.
You can, but they break the detachment, so that doesn't give you any of the bonuses, which is really rough, because you want those strats and relics.
That's where I think you're right. Well, I was immediately going to the Heretic Astarte thing, because it's such the keyword for lots of the other power strats in... Death Guard. And I assume if they have Heretic Astarte, they'll also have the Death Guard keyword.
They don't. The Beast of Nurgle don't. Anyway.
No, Chaos Spawn.
Oh, Chaos Spawn do. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that is probably going to be a rock star unit.
Yeah, they're very good for their points. Seen them on a ton of streams now, so they've been doing pretty well with them. So that's definitely a strong unit to look out for as cheap as it is, for what it does, which is just camp on objectives.
Well, a sack of wounds, not necessarily a slouch in combat. Decent movement, for sub 120 points. Seems like a steal. Seems like a breakout Chaos Spawn.
So, I mean, the demons took a big hit because fundamentally the way that you build your list is just changed. So they run into a lot of issues where, like, even if you take a small detachment of demons and you're like, I just want to take a Bloodthirster and one unit of Bloodletters, that detachment alone could cost you, like, 6 or 7 CP before the game begins. That hurts when you're list building because demons like CP.
What are you burning him on in that situation?
So first things first, you burn 2 to put the Bloodletters in reserve because they can't start on the table because, they won't survive.
Instant gib, yeah.
Yeah, they die immediately. So that's 2 CP. You take a patrol, that's another 2 CP. So you're already up to 4. Then you're going to give them the banner because it feels bad when you fail a charge.
That's for the 3d6 charge, right?
Correct. So now you've spent 5. Then you're going to spend a CP on your Bloodthirster to give him the Exalted trait so that he gets 2 good abilities so he can do good stuff on the field. And then you're going to give him a relic as well, or a Warlord. You're going to give him a relic. So now you've spent 6 CP on that detachment.
Sorry, 7 CP. Is what you're saying.
Because your Warlord, you're not going to want to make a Bloodthirster your Warlord. You're going to want to take your Warlord from somewhere else. So you're just taking a relic from that detachment. So that's 7 CP before the game even begins. You haven't even done any other detachments.
Insane that. They're like demons, I will say from a fundamental like list creation and conceptually how you play them on the table, it's going to be a bit wonky compared to what they were doing in this edition. But they still got some good stuff in Psychic Awakening, and their points haven't been unreasonable.
No, they're not bad. They just need to change how you build a demons list when they rewrite the book, because they need a new book pretty badly too. Mm. It's just because a lot of their buffs require like large model counts, like 20 Plague Bearers, 20 Bloodletters. You don't want to see hordes on the table anymore unless you're deep striking it. And that detachment that I just talked about, that's actually 9 CP when you put the Bloodthirster in reserves as well.
Shit.
So you start to, you haven't even done anything. So that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, I'm not saying they're bad. I would love to get demons on the table and play them. And like the Psychic Awakening gave a lot of the units some good stuff, like Blood Crushers, Bloodthirsters, Great Unclean Ones. It's just to get them on the table, they require so much CP that it's almost not worth it.
Well, they've got a borderline unkillable Keeper. Lord of Change now. Yeah. And the Keepers are so, they're just butchers, which I love.
Yeah, no, like I said, they have some great units. The Keepers and the Lord of Change, I probably would just start on the table, so that saves you some CP there. But yeah, that's the only thing I'd like to see them change. And the word on the street is we're supposed to get a book pretty soon after 9th edition drops for Demons, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that'd be cool if it happens. Speaking of like large number in a unit, so Chaos Cultists come minimum 10 up to 40. Like, do you see a world where there are 25, 40 man units of cultists running around out there?
It's only 40 in two books.
Fair enough. Death Guard is one of them.
Death Guard is one of them. Thousand Sons is the other. I could see, the only one I could see you running a 40 man in would be Thousand Sons, because you can give them a 5+ inball and you can give them -1 to hit as well. So that's not terrible for them.
After the break, I think we can talk about Thousand Sons. I want to bring up Splitting Horrors again. I think there's some interesting things that you can do, but you might not want to do it because of the morale. The Dreaded now could be a meaningful morale phase. Sabotage your whole plan. What about Poxwalkers, though? Again, you know what we've seen, at least in our minds, is that you want to find something under. You want to find units under 10, so you don't want to automatically make yourself susceptible to random blast weapons.
Well, Poxwalkers start at 10, but they're immune to morale, so that there is that. That's really good for them. They also don't. They always get a save. It's a feel no pain save, but they always get it. So when I'm talking about that, it's like, it's important to note that generally speaking, when a cultist gets shot at, I'm not rolling any dice. I just take him off the table. Like, he doesn't get an armor save. Generally, he has a 6+ armor. My cultist probably died, but my Poxwalkers, they always get a feel no pain. So now you have to think about what kind of firepower you're putting into them to take care of them. Not only do you have to do that, you also have to think like, is this enough to kill the whole unit? Because being immune to morale and being obsect is super strong in 9th edition. You're going to want to take things that can just stand on top of those objectives, like you talked about before. Well, if they kill 9 of them, I have one guy left, and you have, I don't know, a tank or a unit of Terminators. Those guys aren't obsect. So now I hold it. So you now effectively have wasted your shooting or your turns.
Is what you
right.
Do. Yeah. The Poxwalker is only one more point than a Chaos Cultist in the Death Guard book.
Yeah. Yes. They've always been like that. They actually, like, when they first came out, Poxwalkers were cheaper, and then they brought them up to 5. They are actually 6 points a model when they first came out, and then they brought them back down to 5, and now they brought them back up to 7. So it's an interesting thing to look at when you look at like where these points have gone for models in 8th edition / to 9th edition. But another unit that a lot of people have been seeing a lot of traction previous to 8th edition, but they got no points increases in 9th edition, and they're going to be a big deal in 9th edition, is Nurglings.
Yeah, baby.
I mean, Nurglings
20 points of base.
Yeah, 17 points of base. They didn't go up at all.
Nurglings and Death Guard are 20 points of base.
Oh, that's weird. Okay. Well, 60 points a pop is still pretty good for them. They used to be 54. I thought they didn't go up at all, but I guess I'm incorrect.
That's all right. Anyway, look, man, there's a lot. We're staring at numbers, right? So there's a lot that's swimming in our heads right now. If I can stay on the Poxwalkers for just a second, though. So 20 Poxwalkers is 140 points, which is the same as about 7.5 Plague Marines.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the troop choice like, what do you think the go-to troop choice is?
I would say it would have to do with the rest of the composition of that particular army, because Plague Marines, they're not actually the guys who are holding objectives and just standing there, where Poxwalkers is kind of what they do. They're designed to kind of move up the field, grab that objective. But Marines, due to the myriad of new abilities they have, they're designed to be shock troops, like they were actually designed to be in the actual lore. So they're designed to push up, threaten things, shoot things, you know, use their grenades to take out, you know, high model and wound toughness units. So
is that using the strat to throw for the whole squad to throw their grenades?
Yeah, well, now you can throw your weapons at 12 inches. Grenades at 12 inches become 100 times more deadlier.
Just for the reach out and touch someone effect?
Yeah, I mean, 6 inches grenades before is not nearly as strong, because people can kind of move around, make sure they're getting all their lines together. But when you think that unit moves 5 inches, then you warp time and they move another 5 inches, that's a 10-inch threat range. And then they're like, okay, so there's 6 inches after that, that's 16. Well, adding another 6 inches range to that, making him 21, is a big deal, especially when you decrease the board size. Also, when you're looking at these objectives, they're in static positions. So they're placed before the game begins. So if you are on a path directly to an objective, your opponent has to be there if they want to get these points. So it makes them a much deadlier choice when you're thinking that you know they're going to be there, you know how large an objective is. So that's a big deal. Also, not having to get close enough up to maybe get charged by another unit or punched is very important for those guys. If they can just sit at 12 inches, well, if they kill the unit that's in front of them at 12 inches, maybe the unit behind them now is far enough away where they're not going to make a charge next turn, and now you can do it all over again.
No, that's pretty terrifying. So in your experience, or maybe what you think, with taking units of Marines, are you just hoofing them up the table because, you know, the table, you have less space to hoof it, or are you putting them in Rhinos?
I mean, Rhinos for Death Guard now, you can spend a CP and give them Feel No Pain. So Rhinos with Feel No Pain are really good.
Sounds very obnoxious.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's that. I would be doing that. If I was taking Plague Marines, I would definitely be taking them in Rhinos. I think that's just because it adds, again, an extra 3 inches when they get out of the vehicle for that grenade trick to work even further again. So that just increases the range of that ability, which is terrifying because it gives you mortal wounds on your grenades because they become superpower grenades. Makes them strength 4. Arch Contaminator gives you full rerolls on those things. And then with Vets, you're doing mortal wounds on 5s and 6s.
Yeah, and you basically triple their threat range from everything you're saying. Yeah, that's pretty strong.
That's the kind of stuff that the Death Guard can do in the new book that just makes them terrifying.
No, I like it. I mean, we talked about some pretty exciting things here. I mean, I really think the winner is the Chaos Spawn. I mean, I know we kind of hit on that early, but I think that's
going. I spoiled it for everybody.
No, it's great. No, I mean, I'm saying I think that's probably like if people were to import their list from 8th to 9th, and you wanted to make one major improvement, I think it'd be able to figure out a way to get 10 Chaos Spawn in your list.
You know what the even better than the Chaos Spawn is? I'm ready to blow your mind here. Thal Blight Spawn in 8th edition, they were pretty strong. I took two of them for most of the edition. They were pretty good. The Flamers were nice. They dealt a lot of damage and they caught a lot of people off guard. They have the character rules so they can't get targeted. In the book, their Psychic Awakening, that Thal Blight Spawn got like 300% more powerful. And in 9th edition, he gains a trick that makes him just a must-have. If you're not taking Thal Blight Spawn in your army, you need to make some space and take one. First things first, 8th edition, you know, their Psychic Awakening, it allows him now to basically spend 1 CP and double the range. So we talked about that before, but that makes that flamer a 15-inch flamer. So a 15-inch flamer that also has the character rule that can just keep spouting out these neg 3 damage flames is super strong. And then they take that one step further. So for 1 CP, you can roll 2 dice when you pick the number of shots and pick which one you want. And then you can roll 3 dice for the strength. And then you get to pick which 2 dice you want to keep for the strength. So now you're basically getting usually around 4 to 5 shots with picking 2 dice. And then your strength is going to be at least strength 8. You are Arch Contaminator, so now you're full rerolls. So you're basically doing like, oh, and you automatically hit because it's a flamer. So you're doing like 4 or 5 -3/3 damage flames that they have no way to deal with because you're a character and you're just standing next to your own guys that they can't charge now due to 9th edition character rules because they have to be able to make it within an inch to declare him. So if you're behind a unit of infantry, they can't get through the gap. They can't declare him or they fail the charge.
It's going to be the dirtiest thing. I mean, we identified that early on. I was like, look, watch out for this. Have to play around this, but it doesn't mean you can stop it from happening.
So it gets one step dirtier, okay? Thal Blightspawn has a nifty little ability in his rules that a lot of people don't know about. His rule says that units that charge do not count as charging. Well, in 8th edition, that was okay because you would charge usually with one unit. And I would explain to my opponent what that meant, and they were like, yeah, but I get to go first. I get to pick. Well, what if you didn't get to go first? And that's 9th edition now. So now you don't go first, which means I charge up to deal with a unit of Terminators or a unit of Plague Marines, and you go, okay, cool. You don't count as charging. I get to go first. Now, whatever just charged me is dead. I just killed them immediately because you just charged into a unit that you thought you were going to go first, minimize all the damage, deal a whole bunch of damage to them, and now they get to go first and basically just pulverize
you. Beat you down with their plague knives.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. Maces.
Yeah.
Or flails.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Heck yeah.
So if you're not taking one in your 9th edition list and you're playing Death Guard, you need to spend... Oh, and they're 85 points. You need to spend 85 points and you need to find some room. And they're an elite slot, so they don't even take up your HQ slot.
Man, I'm digging it, man. This is some nice tech here. I appreciate you sharing it with us.
No problem.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk some Thousand Suns and some Siege Demons.
Yeah.
Yep, baby.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. I still got Adam and TJ here.
Still Adam.
Still TJ.
I made a comment that splitting pink horrors may be amazing. And, you know, reading the morale phase, it is definitely not amazing. And something we haven't necessarily really spoken about so far is that the Insane Bravery, the stratagem there, my nose is the auto pass morale. Use this stratagem before you take a morale test for a unit in your army that test is automatically passed. Do not roll any dice. You can only use this stratagem once per battle. Per battle. That's not a per turn. That's per battle.
I'm not even going to lie. I honestly think this stratagem was written for pink horror splitting because that had its time in the sun for a very long time in 8th edition, and it was very much very frustrating. You would spend all this time doing all this work, and then they would just split the whole time, and they cause no casualties, and then you get to morale, which you'd normally fail and lose like half or most of that squad, and then you would just auto pass morale for 2 CP, and you took enough detachments where you would always be able to pass morale. I can't think of another army that utilized that rule so badly than these guys.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I guess there's some possibility that something like the matched play rules or grand tournament pack or whatever may adjust the frequency in which you can use this stratagem.
That would be nice. I mean, they don't need it for... I'm not saying that pink horrors should be able to auto pass morale every turn, especially with gaining CP back, but two turns would be good. Twice a game would be fine. That would be more than enough to make them okay.
The whole command restraint is a match play rule anyway. So these are things that could be adjusted over time, like we've seen in 8th edition with stuff like boots on the ground and those type of rules that came out along the way altering what match play was.
Well, I just figured it out, guys. I just fixed it. G-Dub, if you're listening. Like, 10th edition, the morale-ignoring stratagem, 1 CP, the first time you use it, 2 CP, the second time you use it, 3 CP, the third time you use it.
Man.
Escalating as you go.
Mm.
Yeah, from your lips to G-Dub's ears.
Solves all the problems, and it's elegant, simple, sexy.
That's a lot of... Just like, that's more
homework. $20,000, please. He takes cash or check, so... when you want to give him.
That is a little more homework each time. But, you know, whatever. I'm cool with that. We're already doing homework.
How many units that would actually utilize that ability? How many times have you said, like, man, I need to auto-pass morale for the third time in a game? It doesn't happen except for this unit. This, like, pink horrors are the only ones that you're like, okay, so for the whole game, I'm going to just allot myself 8 CP. Here we go. Oh, and I spayed all this reinforcement points. That's all of what this is for. And I'm just going to stand here and hold all the objectives.
Yeah,
do what you're going to do.
Although, I mean, it could be. I mean, one of the things we've used them for in the past is that when an opponent is shooting at you, you simply just kind of frustrate them. You tar pit their whole turn because they're continuing to pump fire into this, and then you auto pass morale if necessary. But once they see what you're doing is that you're actually placing models that get you closer to an objective or back towards an aura or something, and then they realize
that fundamentally changes too, because your coherency is a big deal. Firstly, secondly, you're not going to be able to get and stay in coherency as many models as you used to get and tie things up and do things. You're just not playing like the unit is fundamentally changed. Unfortunately, it was a really cheesy ability that really frustrated people to, levels of almost not wanting to play the game. And I applaud Games Workshop for making 9th edition so far the edition that's like the feel bad moments are gone, because that is definitely a feel bad moment. I spent my entire turn and I didn't get a kill, and I killed like 50 models and nothing happened. Literally nothing happened.
And all I did was spread his board control. It was fantastic. Yep. I helped my opponent win the game. It was great.
So with my entire turn.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm excited to see stuff like that change. However, once per game is a little rough for them because it almost completely makes them and other units unusable. They're not the only ones. Zangors, that's really rough for Zangors. They have morale 7 and like they want to be in combat. They kill whatever they touch, and then they're just standing there like, all right, boss, what do you want us to do now? I'm like, now you're going to die because I don't have 2 CP to auto pass your morale again. Or I can't.
You put 3 bolter shots into them. And then you know that that player is shaking in their boots.
All right, I'm going to shoot 10 tactical marines at them. Well, I guess they fail morale and they'll lose like half the squad.
You said tactical marine. I love it.
What's up?
You said tactical marine. I love it. What even is that?
Yeah. Someone out there is playing with it. That's even worse. That makes you feel even worse. You're sitting there, your opponent's playing with like basically like midgets on the table and shooting me and killing my models. Yeah. So
it's so good.
What's the worst chapter right now? I don't want to say anything because I don't want to get the hate from the players of that.
Worst chapter for Chaos or
no, for regular old Space Marines.
Templars.
Yeah, Templars have always been around.
Oh, I'm the Templar player. Like I've got 3,000 points of Templars painted beautifully, and I intend to play them. I don't give them because I don't.
Oh,
give
so
a
you
crap
put black on them and then you put white on them? Wow, that's beautiful these days.
Okay. I know it's great. Yeah. Oh, dude, I will send you some pictures, and you will say they are beautiful. I will have you eat your words, Mr. Lanigan.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Your Zangors you put get two shot black by on them. 4 Black Templar Crusaders with their bolters, and then run off the table.
Yeah, I mean that's basically what happens to Zangors now. Or you're like, oh my god, do I really want to spend 2 CP on these guys? No, you're just dead. That's how this goes. Well, and you just don't care.
No, so you've already burnt your 2 your once per game stratagem on keeping your pink horrors alive. And so
so now they're just dead. Now they're gone. You've made that sacrifice. But
let's talk about Magnus.
Let's talk about Magnus. I'm ready. Yes. Big boy went up 20 points. Which is unfortunate because I don't enjoy Games Workshop just doing these sweeping points increases. I get that like you wanted to do a hard reset, but like increasing just everything across the board just feels bad.
Yeah,
I'm sure you guys
like
have talked about
just a
stuff.
Programmatic increase on some of these things and
like input spreadsheet hit 10%. Cool. But all right, now the problem unit
Magnus isn't that bad.
Nope, no. He's fantastic at 465 points. He is a power. He was a powerhouse in 8th edition. At the tail end of 8th edition, he got a whole bunch of new rules. And his Psychic Awakening book, Ritual of the Damned, which I don't know if you guys know this, probably because you guys aren't like hardcore Chaos players, but Ritual of the Damned, for anyone who hasn't read it, is a book about Magnus. Literally, he's doing this crazy stuff, and they send in the Dark Angels who go with the Grey Knights, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. They try to mess him up. He's trying to do this crazy witch roll. Nobody knows what's going on. And then the book comes out with the rules, and he's not in it. He's just not in the book. Not even mentioned. There's no strats for him. There's no abilities for him. They didn't update his points. They didn't give him the extra attacks or anything, or even nerf him. He's just not in the book or even mentioned in the book. Okay. However, he did get a stratagem in there that indirectly makes him, I would say, about 15% stronger than he was before. And that stratagem is that every time a psyker in your army casts a spell at 9 or above, you can heal that caster D3 wounds.
Mm-hmm. So that that's not nine and above on the dice, is it? That's just a cast, your warp charge
value.
That's
just a cast of nine.
After the pluses, minuses, yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, he's plus two to cast, so his average roll should be a nine. So he should be able to heal almost every turn.
And you can even pay CP to give him plus to cast as well, and just guarantee double T, he's going to get some wounds back. And then you can cast the wounds, the self-heal thing on him, and get D3 plus extras.
So you're looking at, on best case scenario, Magnus heals like six wounds a turn. On your worst case scenario, he heals like two wounds a turn. So six wounds a turn is basically, that is a third of his wound profile.
God,
so,
how many games have you played to where Magnus he's gotten down to one or two wounds and then lasts the rest of the game? You know,
that's happened, but now it's so much better.
Yeah.
Ninth edition is just better for him because the points increases were so small, and he was difficult to kill before at 2000 points. So at basically what we're playing now, which is basically 1800 points of your old army, he's going to be even more difficult to kill. Couple that with the fact that now you can outflank with him.
Yes.
We've talked a little bit about
this. It is 3 CP to outflank him though. Yeah.
Worth it. Because really, I mean, that. But the situation I'm describing about Magnus at one or two wounds, it's the same thing. You don't go first. Somebody finds a way to put a bunch of wounds on him, and then you've got to get the most you can possibly get out of him with his last two wounds left.
Now he gets to come in whenever you want, really disrupting your opponent, which is frustrating because they always have to block for Magnus because his smites and targeting powers will just take units off of the table. And then when he comes in, he's fully buffed. Your opponent can't do anything to stop it. You
you get your turn. What you mean? You bring him in, you cast all your power ups.
Yep.
He just goes to work.
Yep. He gets fully buffed by the time, you know, you're like, if you've done your job properly when you bring him in, he should be nowhere near any psychers unless you're trying to kill a psycher with your psychic powers. So he should do his three spells to try to kill that psycher. By the time, and then the people
you're talking
behind
about completely
him,
out of Deny the Witch range is what you're
putting on. Oh, yeah. You want to be at 24 inches, basically, to take a character out. And then Magnus can be at 24, but the people behind him can be much further back, and they're the ones that are actually buffing Magnus.
Yeah.
So,
because he should always pack offensive powers, shouldn't he?
Yes.
Just because of the plus to cast, right?
Plus two to cast, and he rerolls ones on his checks.
Yeah. Yep.
So, I mean, that's super powerful. You know, he should be able to do a lot of damage. The guys behind him also reroll ones if they're within range of him. So that sets you up for some very powerful buffing powers on Magnus. Then he's also got, you know, the monster rule, he's above a certain amount of wounds as well. So he allows you to screen your characters with him.
With him.
Which is super powerful for a guy that is going to have a 3-up invul, minus 1 to hit, and 18 wounds.
Man, he's the worst model to try to hide. So, I mean, really.
So you hide him by not putting him on the table.
Yeah, he's a beautiful model, of course, but he's his giant wings and the staff that goes, I don't know, it must be a foot and a half long.
It's crazy. I just recently got some glass display cases, and him and Nagash were two models that I was like, all right, got to do exact measurements here so they can fit on a shelf because, his left wing is just so much taller than every other piece of the model. So,
what do you put around Magnus? So, I've heard a lot of people saying that Magnus fits better into a demon's army.
I think Magnus fits better into, strictly speaking, in ninth edition, I feel like Magnus fits better into a Death Guard army. You have super unkilling Magnus.
That's a next level heresy.
That's a double heresy.
Yeah, paired with some I can't be killed type Death Guard stuff, and your opponent just feels bad the whole time. He's trying to kill either Plague Burst Crawlers or Magnus. But if you wanted to stay in the same detachment, I think Magnus works well now based on the book. He works well with Rubric Marines and some demons. But again, Tzeentch demons didn't fare the best to the points increases as well as some of the rules for 9th edition. So, again, I think the resiliency of Nurgle definitely makes him some good pairings with Magnus. Sorry to say.
No, look, man. Sometimes we talk about filthy power game stuff. It's all right.
That is the filthy power game stuff. but, like, if you're putting Magnus on the table, you're already a filthy power gamer because he, in 9th edition, he's just so powerful. Your opponent is already going to have to, you know, it's not something you just put on the table in a casual game and expect your friends to have a good time, because his smites alone will make your make your opponents just feel bad.
I think there's also going to be a push for people to having smaller units. So his smites will basically delete a scoring unit a turn, a typical scoring unit.
Yeah. And that's if you just roll the normal D6. If he rolls the 2D6, whatever you just smote is now dead.
Now, here's an interesting thing. Like, is there an actual, because it used to be not really the case that Magnus would overkill things. There's a legitimate case that he might overkill things now.
There is definitely a big case that he is going to overkill things. So you have to, it's not going to be, and I don't think he's ever been like this. He's never been a blunt object that you just put on the table. You're going to have to finesse him with the rest of your army working in tandem with him to basically go, okay, so two demon princes are going to smite. They have two targets they can smite. They're going to go first. Magnus is further up. Magnus is going to get three targets. That means I can kill a total of three targets this turn.
Yeah.
I have to not go with Magnus first, especially now in the order which you smite, to make sure that you don't mess that stuff up. So that's going to take some tactical thinking on your part to basically not mess that up. Because if you do, it's just going to feel bad that you basically just wasted some load and some psychic power damage that you could have used and you're not using it.
Conceptually, what you said before is really, really poignant, I think. Like, having Magnus alive and healthy at, like, turn four just seems so much more powerful now than it ever was in 8th edition.
Well, like, when you think about, like, screens and stuff like that, like, after turn three or turn three and on, so turn four and on, those last two turns of the game, how much of your opponent's army is really left once you guys have traded blows and traded wounds? You don't really have a ton of your screens left, and Magnus just moves wherever he wants. Yeah. And it's 16-inch move. Like, he's just going to go where he needs to go and get behind stuff and do things.
I'm just picturing him, like, you know, the Four Pillars mission they've shown us. I'm just picturing him in that mission, like, turn three in the middle of the table, being able to put targeted smites and damage onto any of the four objectives, and your opponent just being like, I can't put anything on any of them. It's just going to auto-die. Like, seems like he's never been poised better to dominate the table.
Yeah, he's definitely much, much better. The other thing that makes him really good is he's automatically your warlord now. So he just knows four spells.
Sick. What do you mean automatically? Four spells is because you take really him good. As a, in your supreme command.
Right. So he automatically has to be your warlord. You could put him in an auxiliary, but then you're spending CP before the game begins. Then if you need to deep strike and you need to spend more CP, you're better off just taking him in your supreme command detachment, and then he becomes your warlord. Well, when he becomes your warlord, he knows four powers. So knowing four powers, and then
it's not still awesome. It's
Like, and then for one CP, you can just cast another power after you're done with your three. So Magnus casting four spells a turn seems pretty good when they're all damage dealing spells.
God, that's brutal. I mean, that can be. Yeah, I think that will warp a little bit about what your play group uses.
Right.
I think it will. I mean,
so you're like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm a big Magnus fan, which I am. Like, oh, I love Magnus. You know, I think he's really cool. Let me just put this guy on the table. And then he did 10 mortal wounds to my unit of Primaris Marines and killed them all. And that's the end of that friend group. Like, they don't want anything to do with your casual gaming.
But see, that's the thing, though. He was like that, like, for the first, like, 3 months of 8th, and then everyone was just like, whatever. He's just kind of a bit of a joke, because everyone could just auto-kill him top of turn one, and you couldn't take him anymore.
We use that metric is, like, everyone brings now, you have to be able to kill a knight round one. And he's basically that, you know, unpowered up. He's just
but now the knight wounds. Isn't on the table. Now the knight just doesn't start on the table. Mm-hmm. So now if you see on your opponent's list, they took two, let's just say a new list in 9th edition, they take, you know, two squads of Eradicators and they take a unit of Grab Devs. Well, I can just wait until the Eradicators have shown themselves and then I can just smite them off the table.
And you've cleared the screen around the Grab Devs.
Yep, and now I'm on the other side of the table, so the other unit of Eradicators can't even shoot me because I outflanked the other side of the table. So, like, it's just so tactically better for Magnus than it's ever been for him.
Do you think the same applies to Mortarion? Or because Mortarion needs to be something that's thrown into your opponent's face, he doesn't get the same kind of freedom Magnus does to pick his spot?
Yeah, Mortarion doesn't have the same because his damage is up front. I'm not saying he's worse because he has bodyguards, and bodyguards in this edition have gotten much better. Yeah, they're really good because they got good strats that affect them now with their companies. They also, now that you can put reserves and you don't lose them at the end of turn three, that becomes a lot stronger. Because what happens now is you could outflank Mortarion, and then if turn three comes and you put him on the table, he doesn't make his charge. Well, if you deep struck in three bodyguards next to him, your opponent's going to spend most of the turn trying to kill those bodyguards and Mortarion.
So, just jumping over to points quickly, that was an interesting thing I saw. So there's an obvious, so you've got Blight Lords Terminating and you've got Death Shroud Terminators. Death Shroud Terminators being the ones that we're talking about bodyguard-wise. Now, yep, they're obviously the less good of those two, with the exception of in combination with Magnus, in which case they're arguably as good. But the Blight Lords are an absolute behemoth of an intimidating unit, but they literally stayed about the same on points, whereas the Dark Shroud, Death Shroud went up. I was curious whether you had any ideas why you think that is, apart from just they hit the 20% increase button.
So they did get a new strat. They got a couple of abilities in the Psychic Awakening book where the Blight Lords didn't get any that specifically targeted them.
Yep.
So Death Shroud's got a stratagem that actually targets them.
Oh, you think that it's as simple as that?
I hope not. I mean, there's like, I hope it's just 20% thing, because that's the way it goes. Because the strat that they got for their plague weapons, it basically, what it is use a stratagem in the shooting phase when a Mortarion chosen unit from near is chosen to shoot, and it makes their weapons damage 2. So their flamers all become damage 2 for 1 CP. Okay. Yep. That's pretty good. Yeah, that's good for those guys. However, they have a 6-inch flamer, so the turn they come in, they're not going to flame unless you spend another CP to make them 12-inch flamers. I think they just hit the 20% button, and Mortarion's always been scarier than Magnus for people, because Magnus is like, in chess terms, he's like your knight. He has a whole bunch of different applications, but if you use him incorrectly, he just dies like a pawn. Like, he could just, if you put him, oh yeah, I warp timed him up front and I killed someone's whatever unit turn one, and then they
got
just
that
killed
unit
me.
Of scouts, baby.
Oh yeah. And then I don't know what happened to him. And I look at them bits. And I'm like, well, why did you warp time him up front? Well, I had to kill that unit. I'm like, you what? No, like, you could have just stayed and not lost a 400 point unit. Mortarion is like, I'm going to go up front and I'm going to charge you. And
it feels
it has one ability
to roll dice with Mortarion.
Well, like, the thing about Mortarion is, right, like, Magnus is tactically, like, you have to know when to place him backwards. You have to know when to screen for him because he can't really get in combat. Small arms fire is not really good with him. Then Mortarion's just like, I'm going to charge you. I'm going to kill a unit in combat. Yep. If I live to the next turn, you lose the game. If Mortarion is alive for 2 turns straight in your backfield, that's the end of the game.
That's the way it's always felt. Yeah.
Right. So that's why I think that the Death Shroud got a little more point increases, because he does make them much stronger because of the ability that he can now outflank on like turn 2, and then they can bodyguard with him. So effectively for the second turn, he's not getting shot at by most things. And then when it becomes turn 3, he can basically go wherever he wants now with warp time. So now that there's a smaller table board and you have to go to these objectives or you lose the game, I think he becomes a little better for his tactical prowess or his melee prowess.
Good call.
Yeah. I'm loving these two factions now being able to, I mean, Death Guard have been, I mean, I don't want to say they've been like a gatekeeper list. They were like a solid like C+, I think.
Really?
I think
I'll have you know that all of 8th edition, all those GTs I won, every one of them was playing Death Guard.
Hey, I'm not going to take the skill of the pilot out of the question here. But you also weren't playing like pure Death Guard, I don't think.
No.
Yeah,
no.
So I think pure Death Guard, C+.
We've said this before, though. Like, I think that Chaos is strongest when it uses its, you know, shores up its weaknesses with other factions.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't disagree with that. Same way the Imperials work in that case. And I think even Chaos, it makes a little bit more sense for them to work together, like, thematically wise, certain legions, but not Death Guard and Tzeentch.
They don't like each other, but that's okay. You know, they don't have to like each other to win games. That's fine.
I'm the same guy that's played Dark Angels and Space Wolves in the same army. I don't have an actual beef, you know, with that.
Yeah. Like, we're and Mortarion doesn't really like his sons either, if you read the lore. He really just doesn't like any of his sons. So at least Magnus is like in love with his sons. He thinks the world of them.
I think Death Guard and Thousand Sons up to that B level now, at least. And I'm curious to see where it continues to go.
Oh, I think the Death Guard by themselves is definitely like a B. They are a strong B, if not an A, because like most lists now could take 1,800 points worth of Death Guard and only 200 points worth of Chaos Space Marines or Thousand Suns to grab that warp time.
To get the warp time, yeah.
Yep, that's basically all you really need, man, for Death Guard. Thousand Suns need a little bit more. I think they need Death Guard because, again, Death Guard is a 9th edition book that was written in 8th edition. It's just what it is.
Mm.
So that's okay. But in an interesting change, a lot of my lists, you know, they took out, our Heman, man. You know, first of his name, you know. I don't play him anymore. He doesn't exist in 8th edition.
What are your thoughts on the Demon Princes? Because Demon Princes, I mean, they've got a bit of a jump.
Delicious. They are so good. They've always been good, and people just get upset because they increase the point values. But like the reason that people get upset is the people who aren't using princes properly. Like princes are not the guys that sit there and just cast spells the whole game. They're the guys that for the first couple turns, because there's nothing in range and they don't want to get ganked, they just sit there and cast spells. But then your turn 4, your turn 5, your turn 6, they're out there in the trenches picking up units of models because that's what they do.
Yeah, so the now claws, in ninth all the edition, attacks. Yeah.
Brutal. I mean, they got shock assaults, and now they got an extra attack now. They are very, very strong. Now in 9th edition, I've changed their loadout. I've changed the way they play. And they're even better than they were before because the Thousand Sun ones went up 5 points. So
yes, a lot of people are scratching their heads at that now
I don't understand.
All demon princes cost the same points, but they're not the same thing on the table.
I think that the Death Guard one in particular should cost the same points as the Thousand Sun because
I agree
what you get. I do not think that the demon one regular from the demon book should get that.
Even the regular Chaos Space Marine, the Heretic Astartes one, I think there's a steep cliff when you compare the T-Suns and the DJ one.
Of course,
to any
that's
other
what I'm saying. I think the Demon one and the Chaos Space Marine nowhere near. But you know, I don't take Armin because he just gets killed by characters or the minute they blow up your Playbridge Crawler with whatever, and now you don't have a screen near them. But I've changed the way all my Demon Princes works. Instead of everyone having +1 to cast and doing a whole bunch of spells, they're 3+ in-balls, running around with 3+ in-balls.
Okay.
So late game, your opponent's just like, okay, I finally got this character by himself. And you're like, yep, 8 wounds, toughness 6, 3+ in-ball. What are you going to do about it? And now that the character rules work the way they do, you can't just sit in combat with a Demon Prince anymore. It just won't work. You're just not going to make it out there because on your turn, if you fall back, you can't do anything. But if you don't fall back, he's just going to sit there and maul you with his 8 attacks.
Yeah, I think it is. You hide him around, and then just like turn 2, you're all up in their face.
Yeah,
they move quickly from the support character. Yeah.
Yeah, whenever you've got something that really, you know, you need to split the army or you feel a juicy target, I mean, they're monsters with the 3+ invuls.
No, that's good. So, I mean, they're cool models. I mean, I think now they're maybe a little old, but I still really love the way they look, and there are lots of conversion and like kit bash potential with them.
Yeah, I think they need a new kit badly, but I think that the non-Games Workshop standard ones are really cool. The Forge World Nurgle one is really awesome, and then I think the 3rd edition All Pewter one with the sword and stuff, that guy's ridiculously cool.
Oh, neat. All right. And a Bellicor. I don't know if that's...
Bellicor's great too. I mean, he's a demon prince, most definitely. Just not the demon prince.
Well, technically, he's the first demon prince, I think.
It's true. It is true. He does know some Chaos Heretic Astartes powers, but only 3 of them even know they're 6.
Okay, last question I have. Demon engines. I personally think demon engines are going to be pretty strong just for Heretic Astartes in general in this edition. What do you think?
I think demon engines that are Death Guard are even better.
I can't argue with that, but just
the new rules, not, you know, you basically ignore the penalties for moving. Terrain is a lot better for you now. You know, the ability to know where your opponent is going is probably the most important thing, the most important change of this edition. You know your opponent has to go to these objectives. They're not placing them. You are placing, you know, the game is placing them before the game begins. You know where they're headed. You know where they're going, which makes it easy. Because before, if you set up incorrectly and then your opponent moved an objective or moved his army, that could really hurt demon engines. Now they don't have any of that. They don't get that rule anymore. So that's going to be very strong. I mean, Death Guard are good because all the vehicles that should have had a Feel No Pain, like Rhinos and Defilers and, you know, all the Forge World models, like we talked about earlier, now they can all just get Feel No Pain. So that makes them much stronger. And then when you couple that with, like, Epidemius, who could make them all be plus one toughness, plus one attack, plus one movement, plus one strength, that's going to be crazy to see. So giving stuff Mark and Nurgle just so it gets all those powers is going to be really, really fun to see. I have definitely played some lists already with Toughness 9 Plague Burst Crawlers. It is, yeah, my opponent had a really fun time, to say the least.
Well, I think Paul was alluding to one model in particular when he said Daemon Engines.
Like, oh. I was fishing for the Mauler Fiend blessing.
Really? I thought we were going for the Defiler.
Oh, no, I think the Defiler is going to be
already
real strong.
You already got that one. I thought actually we were talking about Disco Lords for a second. Disco Lords got hurt badly.
They did. They got wounded, man. They're a limping animal at the moment. I'm not sure if you're ever going to see more than one ever again, but you still might see one.
Yeah, well, the big problem with them is not only their points were really bad. The other problem with them is, like, you think you know Games Workshop has designed the terrain to look in particular way that basically hides these guys, lots of line of sight and stuff like that. What happens when you go to your local tournament and or your local gaming store and they have no line blocking terrain and you have a Disco Lord on the table? That's probably not going to feel too good for that Disco Lord, because he has no way to deal with that, because he doesn't get the minuses. He doesn't get any of his powers that he got before. So that really hurts him. And then they're like, oh, you're on the ground? Cool. Let me increase your points by like 50 points.
Yeah.
I think they're 200 points now for those guys. So that hurts a lot.
So yeah, because at that point you're just like, oh, do I take a Disco Lord or do I take a Daemon Prince? And I'm not going to say you're always going to take the Daemon Prince, but I'd take the Daemon Prince. Unless I'm stacking stuff that's going to get a lot of mileage out of the plus one hit aura.
Yeah, I mean, the other problem too is that Disco Lords aren't in Death Guard. They didn't, or in Thousands.
Of course they're not. Yeah, exactly.
So those are two of the strongest books that, like, you could think, like, oh man, if I put a Disco Lord in here, this would be really cool. And then you're like, I can't. So I don't get any of that cool stuff, which means you can't take the detachment for the Daemon Engine detachment, which is the one that allows them to advance and charge.
Advance and charge, yeah.
From Vigilus. They don't get that either.
Yeah. Mephitic Blight Hall is a little go-karts, the Mario Karts, or the other Mario Karts.
Amazing.
Yeah, amazing, yeah.
100 points, dude. Three of those things at 100 points, and they all get Feel No Pain.
And they all look like
they finally get to use their special rule.
And see, yes. when you said terrain, exactly right, Paul. When you said terrain, and you go to a tournament that doesn't have much terrain, Mephitic Blight Hall is bring your terrain with you, my son, and give yourself cover. Like,
they do that, and now they also can have a 4-up invul as well. So, yeah, really difficult to kill those things with
really, really frustratingly, especially when they're shielding a bunch of characters or giving cover to a bunch of plague marines running up the board with a 2+, 4+, 5++ rerolling ones and twos. Like, it's significant.
And they have a Melta. They have a multi-Melta in their kit and a missile
launcher. Is that correct?
And a missile launcher. Yes.
Yeah.
You can armor with a missile launcher or a multi-Melta. Is that the case?
Include blah 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 blah. Each model is armed with a missile launcher. No, they have both. It's a missile launcher, a multi-Melta, and a bile spurt.
And a bile spurt, which is a flamer. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So they get both. You can't swap out any of their weapons. So they just have a multi-Melta and a missile launcher. And if they're a unit of three, they hit on a 3+.
Yeah, I like that. Because you never, they were just kind of seemed inefficient to take all three of them before. So you never really got to do that. At least I never got.
And they
to
get minus one of the fight phase, which is really cool. And then last but not least, their really cool ability is they have the demon keyword. So what if you had some guy that on a 4+ was able to bring back a demon from a unit?
What? Is that the Plague Surgeon?
That is a Great Unclean One on a 4+
with the bell.
Bring back a Blight Hauler for 100 points.
That is a 400 point tax to bring back a 100 point unit. Why not just take four more Blight Haulers?
Well, now he. Well,
we don't like that logic around here. You ring that bell, you get that Blight Hauler back. You laugh the whole way.
Well, now he gets he with the exalted gifts. He's actually really, really tanky because he basically runs around with a 4+ invul, and he runs around with you can give him the 4+ Feel No Pain as well. So he's super tanky himself.
He does run around too. He has a stratagem lets him move faster, right?
Yep, he can advance and charge as well. Like he's definitely good.
I said 400 points. They're not even 300 points. Like, none of the variants are 300 points. They're all
I was like, what are you talking about?
280. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So they're really not that, he's not that bad for his points, and your opponent will want to shoot him because they can't really shoot anything else that actually matters, because he won't want to shoot these guys, because you just bring one back on a 4+. You're like, yeah, whatever, it's fine.
And there's a lot of janky things you can do, because he's 16, is he 16 wounds on the Grand Clear one? He's under the 18?
He's on, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He is 18, so you could, isn't he? Or is
you
he
could 16? Put him, I think he's 16.
I think he's 16. Yeah, I think he's 16.
Let me check on that while you guys are chatting, but because I thought that he was like Bloodthirsters, big wings, no problem, great and clean ones, super problem. Is what
Okay.
That's what I was thinking, because in my mind, if he does, here in a second.
If he does get the benefit of obscuring terrain, you could put him behind obscuring terrain, the big blood holes in front, and then just camp out there all game and saying, oh, you can't get me, you can't get me, too bad, so sad, bringing him back. That's pretty cool.
And then, you know, Nurgling's got that new strat as well, that every time one of them dies in the unit, you roll, and on a 5+, they come back from the dead.
Can I just say, Nurglings seem incredible, and they give so much of what I think Chaos needs, and especially what I think especially so much of what I think Death Guard needs. Like,
yeah, getting, they are 18 wounds, by the way.
Ah, balls.
Yeah.
That's actually a heartbreaker for that unit.
Yeah, that's unfortunate for him.
That might be the difference between them being incredible and them being a bit icky. And they're already quite icky, you know, the Nurgle.
But yeah, Nurglings are going to be a powerhouse, especially with that new strat they just got. Mm-hmm. So that was a Psychic Awakening strat they got.
And it basically, 18 points, you know, in the Demon's book, at least. So good.
That's interesting, because you literally said they were 20 points before.
No, they're 20.
In the Demon book, they're 18.
Really?
That is definitely a typo. Because I thought they didn't go up
changes.
At all.
Yeah, Demon's point changes has listed here. Yeah. 18 points did
Chaos
change.
Chaos Demon's 18 points, yep.
Yep, so I thought they didn't go up, and I was like, when you said it, I was like, really? Because I thought they didn't go anywhere.
Death Guard, 20 points, that's what it says.
There you go. Yeah. Premium for the actual Nurgle faction. Is there a premium?
Yeah. they're even better. But yeah, I feel like if you're not, like, Nurglings are definitely something to look into in the new book. They're definitely going to be something that, in the new edition, just because of the fact that they're OBSEC units. Having five in the squad is not going to, you're not going to get the blast rule, but just thinking about five on the table at 4 wounds each is super powerful. So
nice, man. Well, guys, thanks for this chat about the heretic side of Warhammer 40,000. Let's talk about Xenos. TJ, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Anytime, guys. You guys need me, I'm here to reach out and help the Chaos players.
Heck yeah.
Just the Chaos players, though.
lean on each other, guys. It might be a rocky road. Not a bad road. The journey will be worth it, but it might be a little rocky.
Whatever. Oh, yeah. And Defilers and Mauler Fiends and Chaos Spawn. It's gonna be beautiful. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Make my day.